numbers told the story, they always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Welcome in, everybody. Fresh week of shows here on a numbers game live from downtown Las Vegas, Bar Canada at the D. Most of you probably know, based on Gil Alexander's unfortunate flight occurrence on Friday, we'll just leave it at that, that he is out this week. I'm Ben Wilson in for Gil for three of the next 5 days. Kelly Bidlin is here. I still feel bad for Gil on his flight that I believe ended up taking off at about 11:39 p.m. Pacific Friday night. That was supposed to take off at 10:43 a.m., but
alas. Is that what it ended up being? I know he was tweeting about some of this. I was getting a live text run through for about, 5 hours on Friday.
I'm a flight nerd because I take about 70 flights a year, so I have all the trackers, and I went to bed, and I'm like, I wonder where Gil is, and it was projected to land at 4:42 a.m. Eastern.
Oh,
I'm like, oh, God.
That is
sorry,
brutal.
Gil.
We had talked last week about how the heat affects the flights, and that's exactly what the problem ended up being for him. They couldn't get the plane out. It's like so terrible.
Poor Gil.
The flights.
Summer travel, man.
The flights, the industry in general is just a nightmare, man. Like the fact that they put everybody on a plane and they don't let you off a plane like forever. They ended up leaving, letting them off, and then, yes, hours later, finally fly out.
When things go wrong, yes, they tend to go really, really wrong. Alas, Gil out this week, but we will, despite not having any major of the four major sports today, nothing going on. It is that classic stretch here, three-day period where the All-Star break happens in Major League Baseball, and there's not much daily to bet on, but there's still a lot to get into. We will have Mark Borchardt on coming up in just about 15 minutes or so. Mark is going to go through a potential bet he has for the All-Star game, as well as some MLB futures for the second half. I know we're technically into the second half, but post-All-Star break. And we'll get Mike Somich from The Handle. He's on Saturdays and Sundays here on VSiN. He'll join us final half hour of the show right here on the desk at Bar Canada. At the same time, though, Kelly, as much as we have this quote-unquote deadest period in sports, we get the Open Championship starting Thursday, which is great for us going to Royal Troon. We'll get some early thoughts on that coming up today. And we had so much that happened over the weekend between Euro 2024, Copa America, MLB Draft. You also get a number of significant events, too, going on, whether it was some crazy events to wrap up the final stretch in Major League Baseball before the All-Star break. Robert McIntyre wins the Scottish Open. You get a Wimbledon champion in Carlos Alcaraz and Barbora Krejcikova back to Saturday. So all in all, as much as it is brutal for us as bettors not having anything here the next 3 days, we had our fair share and then some over the weekend.
Yeah, we really did. These past couple weeks, the soccer going on has been great. Wimbledon going on. A lot of great things going on in Europe right now. That's what I've been saying for the past, past month. It's more exciting going on in Europe than what we've got going over here in the States.
Well, I felt buried within all of that, and it maybe speaks to how the college baseball landscape has changed so much and the popularity there, betting-wise. But this is the first MLB draft I can remember where the betting interest was – so off the charts, and the markets were so wrong. And, it's probably not fair to say the markets were wrong. It was more that a very small percentage of bettors who were shaping this market, they completely got it wrong because the number one pick favored. I was on the air yesterday, a Live Bet Sunday here, and as we were going off the air, that was right as the draft was about to start. And J.J. Weatherholt from West Virginia, outstanding outfielder in the Big 12, he was the minus 190-ish favored at DraftKings, at least, to go number one overall. For a draft starting in, at the time, Kelly, 5 minutes. It's pretty rare, right? We've followed the NFL draft, NBA draft, even in the NHL draft. This stuff, at least from the number one perspective, is pretty well chiseled in. You have a good idea. Something leaks. The market knows. Oh, the market did not know because J.J. Weatherholt, minus 190 favorite, 5 minutes before the draft. He goes number 7 to the St. Louis Cardinals. The number one overall pick was Travis Bezana, who was about in the 180 to 2-1 range. Bezana out of Oregon State. He goes to the Cleveland Guardians first overall, who had a 2% chance to even get the number one pick since they introduced the draft lottery in MLB going back to last year. And it just leads me to think, Kelly, it's one of those things I was sort of banging my head into a wall, like, man, we follow college baseball, especially on this show between Gil and some of our guests here, and it's something I'm calling a lot of games early in the season, so I've gotten to see a lot of these prospects, and it's like, man, what a betting vehicle this certainly is right now and probably still should be, you would think, at least over the next couple of years, because last night, DK had draft position props.
Yep.
They had matchups. They had everything you would expect for a large-scale betting vehicle like a draft, and yet most people, I would venture to guess, had no idea that the draft is even going on because There was not a Paul Skeens type number one prospect. And two, if you were a better here and you were looking for value, there was a lot of value to be had. It was just you didn't see ESPN front page painted with mock drafts. You didn't see all sorts of coverage leading up to it. So it was a little bit harder to find. And it's one of those FOMO things where I wish I had gone deeper into it because clearly the market had really no idea. They were just throwing out odds just to see what sort of action they could get. And that's pretty telling, though. When you get a minus 190 guy at close who ends up dropping to number 7, it's at least worth pointing out and noting for next year.
Yeah, this is I'm glad I didn't really catch much of this yesterday. I knew the draft was going on, but I didn't really see the betting implications of it come out. I think it's a good reminder, though, of for as much as we've complained – for the NFL draft, and I guess I would even include the NBA draft in this a little bit, of kind of those, it being tougher and tougher to bet the draft, you know, year after year, and just to get, you know, the timing with when stuff gets posted and more limited options and stuff like that. I think the NFL drafts maybe become a little bit tougher. We've talked about that, I think, in the past year or two. And you've got so many more people betting it now, too. But you also have... And all I could think about as you were talking there, Ben, was I was complaining a lot about that. You know, a lot of it before was it was always the one event, right, where bettors would win at, right? It was betting the NFL draft. They were able to kind of just beat the books on this information betting. And while that might not, the books might not be opening themselves up to take as many bets and lose as much these days on the NFL draft, you do have books like DraftKings and others out there that are now posting stuff and more markets for things like the MLB draft and the NHL draft that, I mean, before a few years ago, Ben, like I can't tell you that I knew anybody betting those specifically.
And were they even offered?
And were they even offered? That's part of the problem, right? I don't know. Most people weren't betting because stuff wasn't even being offered. But, I mean, you've got guys like Luke Swain we have on every year to talk NFL draft, NBA draft. It's his best betting vehicle. We talk a lot on here about the NFL draft being one of our best ones every single year. But when you're able to attack new markets like that where there's limited interest from the outside bettors, you could take advantage of some bad numbers. So right. I think that's pretty clear what you saw last night.
It's not to suggest that it is just some uber soft market that you have the best edge on as a bettor because, in all honesty, with the MLB draft, as far as information goes and leaks and opportunity to jump in front of a market, there really isn't much. That's the thing.
Right.
So even if there isn't, though, a obvious edge if you're a bettor, because there's so little information, at the same time, books really have nothing to jump out in front of stuff on. And as a result, they're kind of doing their best guessing. So it's sort of like compare it to like an opposite of the NFL draft, where for so long we talked about, okay, there is going to be information that gets out. There are leaks. You can just get out in front of it as bettors, and then the books have to react. Whereas for this, it's more like, well, you know it's the MLB draft. You're not going to get much info that breaks, with the exception of maybe the number one overall pick in a big year where there are, you know, a couple of guys who are at the very top. Outside of that, though, books kind of just have to take their stand, and then you can use your best information, even if it's not the obvious of, okay, this guy is going to this position. But you can use all the other resources at your arsenal and at least make very, very good informed decisions. And a lot of the college baseball guys who've come on our network, Kelly, were betting, I saw last night, betting the draft pretty heavily, just kind of tracking some of their plays they posted. A lot of them did not get the first pick right because that seemed to be a well-kept secret by the Guardians. They guarded that, so to speak. But a lot of the positional drafts, the positional over-unders, the matchups were very profitable for a lot of people I saw last night, and that's at least the thing to keep in mind here going forward. MLB draft, that was the first couple of rounds there underway last night. Also, it was funny to watch that at the Stockyards in Fort Worth. Great place.
Oh, is that where they did it?
They're all wearing cowboy hats.
That's awesome.
It was good to see. Also, as far as the tennis, worth noting, because it was not an epic yesterday, but you did get a clash of the titans between Carlos Alcaraz and Novak Djokovic. Alcaraz wins in straight sets to take a second straight Wimbledon crown for the second straight year. Knocks off Novak Djokovic. Djokovic closed plus 110, second time in 17 years. He was an underdog at Wimbledon. Pretty incredible to think about that, Kelly. And I really, more than anything, just took away that when you watch how many low percentage, high level of risk shots Djokovic was forced into taking mid-rally, that was probably the starkest thing for me. And yes, he's still only, a month or so removed from a knee surgery, and you could tell the movement was just not the same for a guy who has made his career for being so nimble and agile. But it was really the first time, and maybe this is because Carlos Alcaraz is such an unbelievable athlete who can get to literally any ball anywhere on the court, but it was the first time that it definitely felt in the moment like Djokovic has lost something. And even on the broadcast yesterday, you heard the commentators discuss, how many more of these are we going to get realistically? We had the conversation with Federer. We've had it with Nadal. Djokovic is really the last of the big three still left. But even in a tournament where Alcaraz was not at his best, did not have his good serve for a majority of the tournament, it was on the surface really impressive to see Alcaraz find a way to get through the draw despite not having his best stuff for most of it. But at the same time, seems like, yes, do I expect Djokovic to kind of have an eventual resurgence, like a Jimmy Connors-esque? He's just playing gamesmanship and running mental hurdles around everybody once he's fully healthy. I do, but at the same time, you could tell, at least for his game, Djokovic is not nearly the guy that he was, and it was stark because Alcaraz was there for the taking, and Djokovic really had no answer.
I'll defend the guy a bit. I mean, I feel like I've been doing this for 2 weeks now. Like, it is just it's a month away from a knee surgery, right?
It was a month.
I'm with you that he's going to be on the decline here in his latter years, but man, I feel like nobody wanted to give him any credit throughout the entire. It's just amazing the level we hold some of the greats in sports to, you know, where it's. He made it to the finals without anybody ever even complimenting a single match that he played. Basically, it's like, he's got a month away from a knee surgery. We're not going to give him any credit for any win whatsoever. And then when he loses finally to Alcaraz, it's almost over for him.
The ultimate irony too is that he finally got betting support in the final because it's so rare to get Djokovic as a dog. Yet he goes down. I'm not saying his career is over, just that. There's clearly going to have to be a little adjustment that goes on in the back nine for him. All right, Mark Borchardt will join us. Give us some second half baseball thoughts next.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Get ready to win big this NFL season with a VSiN Pro subscription. Sign up on our football special before the end of July and get full VSiN Pro access from now through the Super Bowl for an early bird discount of $175. That saves you nearly 50% off the monthly price. And with VSiN Pro, you'll get access to the daily best bets, exclusive betting splits data, proven betting systems, and analysis we have from our professional handicappers, 24/7 video content, and all special edition betting guides like the NFL Guide. Don't wait. Sign up before the end of July, and you get full VSiN Pro access through the Super Bowl for an early bird discount of $175. You can sign up now at VSiN.com/subscribe, VSiN.com/subscribe. From Bar Canada at the D, it is MLB Home Run Derby Night with Kelly Bidlin. I'm Ben Wilson. As a weird nerd who likes to keep track of very obscure stats, Kelly, this was the fourth straight 4th of July I hosted at VSiN, and the second straight year I'm hosting on the Monday of Home Run Derby Day on Numbers Games.
Okay.
Random streak. Beat the streak. I don't know.
I take
it as a badge of honor.
I worked July 4th. When I got to VSiN, it was the first July 4th I had had off work in like a dozen years because of just working in broadcasting. You're working all the time.
I've done way too much handicapping on the hot dog contest.
Oh, that was your point. Okay, for hot dog eating contests and home run derbies, yes.
Home run derbies, hot dog eating contests, that's I guess my niche, I suppose. As we welcome in Mark Borchardt, we go out to our progressive guest line. Great to have Mark on. Kind enough to join us, even though there's no actual live baseball to talk about from somewhere in the great state of Arizona. Mark joins us right now. You follow him at Base Winner. Mark, great to have you on. I don't know where the home run derby and hot dogs, how you level those, but those are two great staples.
They have a really huge place in my heart, Ben. In fact, I actually went on a BetUS show. I do shows for BetUS every morning, and we have one every year for the hot dog eating contest. And this year, my plays weren't very good, but I modeled it. I ran Monte Carlo simulations for the hot dog eating contest. And then I think I'm most proud of this. We had a hot dog eating contest for all the host of our show, plus the three analysts, and I beat them all as an underdog, and I was so fired. Fired up about it, and I still am. You can see how excited I am for winning the in-show hot dog eating contest.
Whoa, Mark, what was the number of dogs? How many minutes?
So the contest was who's the quickest? It's a little bit different. Who's the quickest to eat two hot dogs and two buns? And I was come on, give me a chance. I was the underdog, and the other guys are younger than me, and I get that, but I smoked them.
Right,
I was quick. Yeah,
yep. We used to have a hot dog contest, but it was put the kibosh was put on it when one Greg Peterson, I believe, choked on a hot dog.
yeah, those are banned for life.
Very long tenured VSiN employees remember when that happened. That was probably 5 years
ago. I mean, that might be good for ratings, though. I mean, that's gonna like guy gets chokes to death eating a hot dog, and okay, let's go over to VSiN. A lot of clicks on that one.
I think the look of panic from our execs' faces painted probably the more accurate story. But yes, I think there is some part of us that would definitely love to see something like that, Mark. As far as tonight, though, we have the Home Run Derby, and there is a specific sort of analytical basis for what you are looking at. I did not realize how successful you have been betting the Derby, at least recently. I've had so many second place finishes. It's heartbreaking. I think the first one I had was Miguel Sano, I want to say 2017 at 8-1. And ever since then, it's just like the great white buffalo. You're just like, come on, can I get a Derby win? But you have been on the opposite side here. What has really been the key to success if you've looked at things from an analytical perspective on this?
Well, it's a tough contest, first of all. I think there's a lot of luck involved, but I had a hypothesis back in 2019 that the person who had the highest average exit velocity versus the changeup, as the changeup's kind of the most similar pitch that these guys are going to see, would have a good chance to win that. And so I did some back testing, but this is back in 2019, and I thought, well, this has some legs. It was extensive about it. I did some regression analysis and stuff. I said, well, maybe this thing has some kind of legs, and it's a good story anyway. It makes sense from a logical standpoint. So the first year I did it, I bet it was Alonso having the highest exit velocity versus the changeup. He won it, and then they didn't have it in 2020. In 2021, Alonso had the highest exit velocity versus the changeup. He won it. In 2022, Soto was in the top three. He won it. And then last year, Guerrero was number two in exit velocity versus the changeup. Last 3 years, average exit velocity, and he won it. So I think it's a fun way to play it for me. I take the top three guys, give myself a chance based on the exit velocity. And just right off the top here, there's kind of a surprise in this based on the odds. So you would think, you know, Alonso having such a high exit velocity over the years would have the same high exit velocity versus the changeup. And he indeed does. At 101.4 is Alonso versus the changeup exit velocity, average exit velocity last 3 years. Then it's Gunnar Henderson at 98.8. But this was a surprise to me. Teoscar Hernandez is number three. So he's 11-1 in the market. So what I'd like to do is I'd like to give myself a chance and give myself a little bit of action on a day like this. So I group bet it. And essentially what you're doing, and I can tell you the amount, if you bet $100, you put $50 on Alonso, you put $34 on Henderson, and you put $15 on Hernandez. And if you win, you're laying on this the way it is, you're going to win $88 off your $100 bet. So you're laying like -114. But I think it's a decent opportunity, Ben, to get yourself some action. And at least in the past, it's won. Now I know there's different rules this year, and quite right. Honestly, I know that they're going to take the top four guys, and then after that, I understand what they're going to do. They're going to seed it 1-4, 2-3. But there were some things that I thought would hamper Teoscar as far as the if you get like too many outs. I couldn't remember these specifics, but they penalize you for getting outs, and so he's got the longest swing of all the guys in the competition, and I think that long swing. He might get more outs than the next guy. But anyway, that's how I'm playing it, Ben.
That's fascinating, though, to look at it from that perspective, especially when you have a long shot like a Teoscar Hernandez. We will go through all the rule changes here in our next segment. We're going to do our own little Derby thought and an all-star game draft here. Hernandez, the third from longest shot. Pete Alonso right now at DraftKings, he's taking a little action. He's at +320 there as the favorite as they go to Globe Life Field. And honestly, if you're taking a long shot too, Mark, you're trying to get your guy into the top four, and then the way the live betting works, it's actually very clean because you've got, you know, time in between, right? You can bet the matchups as they are reposted. So it is actually, as far as we always talk about live betting and how difficult it can be because of the timing, but you could make a case. It's honestly not even really live betting. It's just you've got a half hour in between, and you can kind of reset things and assess where your portfolio is at, which makes it actually pretty interesting and simple to do it.
Absolutely. There's ways to tackle this, and that's what's You know, Ben, that's what's been amazing about the last 3 years, and Gil and I talk about it a lot, is so many different ways to bet. And I know he's taken advantage of the monthly bets. And like you guys are going to have on the next – I'll pump your next segment up. That sounds interesting to me. You guys are going to have your own way that you do the home run contest. So that's what's really been cool, as, you know, coming from a guy who, you know, I don't even think we had five inning lines back when me and Gil started the show, or when I was on the show, Betting Dork. I don't even think we had five inning lines. And now all the plethora of bets that you have right now, it's pretty cool. It really is. And I think that it's in some ways it's hard to manage, you know, so you almost have to kind of focus on a particular aspect of it. And that's what I like about what Gil's doing is he's like, okay, well, I'm going to do monthly bets. And man, he's been doing really, really good on those, Ben.
Mark Borchard with us here on A Numbers Game. Mark Borchard aging himself by admitting that when he and Gil first started doing betting shows, you could not bet first five. Alas.
I know, man. The years just go by so fast.
Crazy.
And it must be nice to be young, handsome, and all the women are fawning over you, Ben. But,
oh, yeah.
You know, I had that many years ago. So
many years back, yes. It is now reflected in the fact Mark Borchard is a hot dog contest champion within his own in his own little inner circle. That's how we now flip it forward.
I got to update the bio. Yeah.
Got to update the bio, of course. As far as the actual game itself, outside of the unders, which have been very profitable over the years, 13-2-2 to an under 8, which is the total for this year over the last 17 years. Mark, what other angles, if any, are you looking at for the actual All-Star game itself, which is tomorrow?
I don't play the All-Star game. It's just too squirrely. I've tried to model it. I've put things in there, and it really comes out. It's usually priced about right. I think that it has been, and you don't know rotations and stuff. But one thing I did want to say, because there is a little bit of time here between now in the next regular season game, but I was doing my simulations today, and these Texas Rangers, gosh, to win the division, to make the playoffs, to everything over the win total. I mean, they're looking good on this Monte Carlo simulations. And I didn't even, this is what's really kind of cool. I didn't even put DeGrom coming back in, and he's slated to come back August 2nd, I think is the date. And DeGrom for me is like, he's either top three or top one pitcher by my rating. So that's going to do nothing but help. But if you guys are looking for a futures opportunity, and again, I could go into the math, but we have 50 seconds and I can't. But all the numbers suggest that Texas is really good in any market, Ben.
That is also the beauty of this 3-day All-Star break, is now you see a lot of books post those rest of season win totals. Rangers 80.5, even though they are a few games under 500, but 80.5, that is juice to the over, plus 850, the third of the favorites in the AL West right now. Always fascinating.
5-1 to make the playoffs.
And 5-1 to make the playoffs.
Yeah, and just real quick, I have them 83 wins, and I've got them to win the AL West. Probably, I think they're priced in there about plus 895, and I've got them at about around plus 500, Ben.
Good stuff. Thanks as always, Mark. Great to see you.
Pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
A Numbers Game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Back here on A Numbers Game, big thanks to Mark Borchard for joining us talking some Major League Baseball. We're about to dive into the Home Run Derby All-Star Game. Always great chatting it up with Mark. And I get so much from whenever he joins Gil on those quarterly pods, Kelly, on the Beating the Book podcast, which Mark gave us the unbelievably useful nugget, which was that the White Sox were a top five ROI team in the first five and then the worst team in baseball full game. Which then has led all of us, I think, in the betting space to look at those double results of, all right, White Sox, first five, and then to lose the game, and it's a giant payout, and the White Sox do that a lot. Let's see how it all works out. And that is cashed since Mark was on the pod with Gil, so always great to talk with Mark.
I think it's cashed four times. It happened again on Friday, I believe, right? Yes. I don't even know Saturday, Sunday, but yeah, on Friday, I think it hit again.
Happened Friday. I was very fortunate Friday.
We were talking to Jordan Sherwood on Friday, and he was going to the game. We're like, go ahead and bet this for
just
fun.
Just do it. Yeah. And that was the game where Garrett Crochet was – there was a lot of action that came in. I mean, White Sox were minus 200, I saw, to win the first five, and then minus 160 for the game. But Crochet, right before the game, they announced, oh, he's on a 30-pitch limit tonight. Just to keep him fresh because he's going to pitch in the All-Star game for the AL. So he goes out, throws two innings, and you're going, uh-oh, you got to get 21 outs with that bullpen? Sure enough, it did not work out that way. Even though they did get to the end of the first five, they were up in that game, the White Sox, 2-1, but ultimately lose the game. So anyway,
I like that still in the standings that counts, right? At the end of the day, they're still so bad that you can have a pitcher go out there to rest him up for the All-Star game. Like, what? Only a team that bad can do something like that.
It is pretty special that they would, yes, go to that level. Like, oh, all right, we're going to get our guy some rest. With that, we can also transition into our own thoughts here on the Home Run Derby, Kelly. First off, the rules, because Mark alluded to it in our last segment. There are a lot of rule changes here. The most notable that people will gravitate toward is the fact that, and to me, this is very beneficial from a betting perspective for the long shots in particular, it is no longer bracketed in the first round. So it's all eight guys. They'll go individually. Whoever finishes in the top four on aggregate homers, they advance into the semifinals. Then they will bracket it. Then it is more of the traditional format that we saw going forward.
Which I like that.
Yes.
I'm just going to, I don't know, randomly weigh in on all of these. There's so many more rule changes than I thought there were, but I like that one.
Where it gets a little bit hairy now is the actual, the timing rules, because, once again, there is a timer here. But the league is trying to avoid these guys just going swing, swing, swing. And then what has become really difficult, and bettors have rightly very much vocalized their displeasure in this, is you start getting balls that are in the air while guys are taking their next swing, and counting has been an issue. Like, the count has been gotten wrong, which matters when you're betting totals. And Major League Baseball has tried to curb that. So now it's still a three-minute round, but it is a maximum of 40 pitches. You still get your timeout, maximum of 40 pitches. Then there is a bonus round, and they're, instead of getting the timed bonus round in the past, now it is by outs. You get three outs, so it is sort of a call to the old-school format of how it used to be. You get three outs, and if you get a swing that has a 425-plus-foot home run, you get a fourth out.
Okay.
You just get the maximum of four
outs. That's also how they are decided. That's the tiebreaker for any of the ties in the first round is distance, longest distance of home
run. That as well. And what that change allows for, you get an unlimited number of home runs in the bonus period. So if you are behind after the timing, technically speaking, this is, again, a callback to how it used to be. You could still make up all that ground, which is at least compelling in the final round, it is shortened, so we're not going as long. It's just a two-minute with a 27-pitch maximum. The same bonus rules do apply, though, for the final. So that is what you have to know. No longer just raw timing. No longer just swing at as many pitches as humanly possible. You have to be a little bit more strategic with this.
Yeah, you know me. I'm not the biggest baseball guy. I think all those changes make sense, though, and I like them all. Because there are, I think, for the average fan at home, which is really me, right, I think it was kind of obvious for the past few years. You're like, okay, well, like, just get off as many pitches as you can and swings. Like, you're going to have an advantage if you can see, 10, 15 more pitches than one of the other guys. Like, that's an advantage, even if you're not hitting them all out. And I think when I hear from baseball people, right, whether this is kind of just true or we just kind of make this up, when you get worried about guys going to the Home Run Derby and messing with their swing or whatever.
Sure.
I think doing something like that only furthers that belief, right? When you're trying to, you're hitting balls is so quickly, it was way more quickly than you would ever see in any real life experience. I think that's where it really changes up how you're doing things. So I think the number of outs is great. I mean, you don't want this to go on forever, so I understand why they still have a clock in place of some sort, but I think the number of outs make more sense in reality than an actual clock.
What you speak is what a lot of players, according to the report from Buster Olney of ESPN, have been privately talking about.
Yeah.
His report was that they have fretted, I like that word choice, about what they perceive to be a heightened risk for injury because of the accelerated pace. So this was, in large part, player-derived. The average total number of swings per round, 43.
Have we ever done a money ball in baseball? I should do that, man.
Like the actual, gold ball?
No, yeah, it's like the gold ball, like basketball, not like the movie.
I was thinking about the movie. Well, they there's always been some sort of, for the bonus round, they did at one point use a goldish ball.
Okay. Right.
It had gold on the sides, I remember.
I like that. Let's go back to that. I mean, high leverage, you need like high leverage moments in baseball.
I'm old school. I love the old 10 outs, but I'm probably in the
minority. I like that too. I liked that too.
But I have the attention span for it. A lot of people don't. That's why they've changed it. As far as the actual odds, there is a long shot I do like. It is not Teoscar Hernandez, who is one of the three that Mark Borcher just gave out for us. I was looking at guys who have had experience here, And the one guy who really stands out, who's probably being unfairly dinged for a bad performance in the past, he had a first-round exit at Dodger Stadium a couple years ago, is the Guardians' Jose Ramirez, 13-1 at DK. He's shortened a little bit at Circa. He's down to 11-1. But Ramirez is the guy I like who was injured in that derby. We just didn't know about it at the time. He had a wrist injury. He was playing through. He's a switch hitter. He has more pop from the left side. He could only bat from the right side. Last time I checked, that is a suboptimal strategy when you are trying to swing at a lot of baseballs in a short amount of time. Ramirez, of the eight participants, has the third highest home run count, even though that is not as predictive as, say, what Mark talked about, looking at exit velocity on changeups. Ramirez is a guy who has been in this before, has the pop to get it done, and just based purely on the odds, should be much shorter. But because of his one-off performance that was bad, he's being punished as a result. And because it is not a simple bracketed strategy here, you get the full first round, you're just trying to get into the top four, and it's not like it's that long of a runway. You get a 13-1 shot, all of a sudden you're in the semis. Even if you're up against Pete Alonso and you're a $2 dog in that matchup, there are still very logical, simple ways to monetize that ticket.
Yeah, the two guys I had written down that I had planned to bet tonight, and now you and Mark have both confused me. It was I was just going to go back to the well with Alonso. I mean, I think what we've learned over the years with Pete Alonso and the home run derby is that if you can handicap the pitchers somehow that are involved, it's almost as important as the hitters, because the whole Dave Jouse thing that he's got going on and just grooving that into him every time, making it real easy for Pete Alonso, it's become pretty plainly obvious to me that is a huge factor that we haven't really factored in as much in the past with these derbies. So I was going to probably play him and Jose Ramirez. Ramirez at the long number kind of did jump out to me as well, Ben. But I think Mark just had a great breakdown, too, of how you could, Alonso, Gunnar Henderson, Teoscar Hernandez, grabbing a bit of all three of those guys, and you're getting it a little under even money.
The really good breakdown is Buster Olney. Again, he has an article at ESPN.com right now breaking down all of the pitchers to these players, which is just probably good to read if you are going to bet on this tonight, just so you have an idea. And it is Junior Betances, who is the hitting coach for the Columbus Clippers, one of the minor league, the AAA affiliate for the Guardians. He pitched to Ramirez back in 2022. There is familiarity there. It's just the injury really was what caused the struggles there. It was a thumb injury, if you go back to that derby there for Jose Ramirez. As far as the All-Star game itself, nothing I will be betting. It is 8, slight juice to the under. Probably the most intriguing thing, though, Kelly, is the MVP market. After we saw Elias Diaz win from the Colorado Rockies last year, 200-1. And I just had to chuckle as I pulled up the odds today. They were not out yesterday, but they are up now as of this morning. And at least at DraftKings, I can't corroborate as far as any other books, but there is nobody longer than 100-1, even though there are guys who definitely should be longer than 100-1, but because of how this usually works, right? All-Star game, you'll get a lot of players coming off the bench in late-game situations with opportunities to change the outcome of the game with one swing of the bat. And if this is going to be low scoring, it is likely that one of those random bench hitters will win this award, but you are being capped here by a lot of books at 100-1, which, again, makes me chuckle, if anything else.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. And that might have been one of the markets that you could have actually bet with the All-Star game in the past. I think, that maybe got broken already. I don't know about you. Is there that's one I stay away from. I'll usually bet the Derby. NBA and MLB All-Star Week's kind of the same thing for me. Like, I'll get involved in three-point contest for the NBA, right? I don't touch the game. And then I'll get involved with Home Run Derby. I like betting a couple of these guys usually every year. The game I stay away from. The under trend was interesting to hear earlier. I did not realize that had been the case, because I think the natural reaction is for most bettors to look to an over in a game like that. But that's interesting. Game I never touch. Yeah, I never.
It was our Will Hill. He was on with me yesterday on Live Bet Sunday, who was talking. He already bet the under. And it's sort of like, if you are in that camp, you're just betting it consistently every year, because long-term, it has become more of a cash cow than other bets in the All-Star game. When we return, we'll get some thoughts from the Scottish Open from Kelly, first look at the Open Championship, and more next on A Numbers Game.
A Numbers Game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Right now, you should go ahead and check out VSiN.com, where Adam Burke has a full breakdown of how to bet on tonight's Home Run Derby, as well as the All-Star Game for tomorrow. And how about this? Big day for the NBA bettors out there, Kelly Bidlin. NBA win totals are out now at DraftKings, and Zach Cohen has a full breakdown. There are, I believe, all but three teams out just because of potential pending trades that are going on. But still, most of the NBA teams have win totals out. That's along with betting splits, exclusive articles, odds by state betting tools, and betting guides at VSiN.com. Did you know that was going to be last night is when I saw it? July 14th?
No, I was waiting for it, you know, for someone to post. We didn't know who was going to be first to market. We had seen last year these dropped right around the same time. It was kind of right when Summer League had started. So I was kind of waiting, expected it to be sometime during this week, but hopefully that's when some of the other books get involved.
Makes a lot of sense because of the dead period that we're in.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll talk a little bit more about those maybe a little bit later in this show, definitely tomorrow. I haven't had a bunch of time to dive into them. I don't think there's too many surprises off the top. I would say biggest takeaways I had were, man, there are some teams with higher win totals than I thought. Man, like Denver felt a little high to me. I think they were like 52.5. Boston all the way up to 57.5. I can't really knock that one right now. But there were a lot of teams in those 50s, kind of in the mid-50s ranges I was a little surprised on. And then I wanted to see right away what the Spurs win total was going to be. I was hoping it was going to be more around 30, and it's 35.5 is what it opened up at. I think it's fair. I mean, I know they're only going to be expecting pretty much over money on them anyways, so you're probably setting it a little bit higher, but... Man, Wemby's here, man. He's here. Like he is too good. I expect that team to get pretty significantly better every year as we go on here.
Really, the one that stood out to me was within the Western Conference, where you figure that is going to be such an absolute war of a league where there could be 11, 12 really competitive teams and only 10 even get into the play-in tournament, with 8 actually making the real postseason. Sacramento's 45.5. I didn't feel like the DeRozan trade made them at all better on the defensive end. Yes, you had another score, but it was a weird flex to just go all in on clutch offense when you still can't really get a stop against the good teams. 45.5 felt a little bit rich.
What's funny is, if anything, I disagree on that. I actually thought that one would be a little lower than it was. A little bit higher than it was.
The 45.5.
Because I think, I don't disagree with anything you just said. I think regular season-wise, they're going to be fine. I think you still got a team that were a bunch of these guys. You don't have many health concerns. A lot of these guys play a lot. DeRozan has shown to matter so much in those regular season. You get a great clutch shooter, mid-range shooter like that. I don't think it helps them. I agree with you. Once they get to the playoffs, this doesn't really take them a step further. And they might be struggling to make the playoffs. Still around that number. But, man, if anything, I think I'd be betting the over on them.
They were 46 and 36 last year. So books basically just set that at the existing number. And with how deep I believe the West will be, just seems like it'll take a lot, as much as that is very much the case, Kelly. You could see that more reflected in struggles in the postseason, but I just feel like there are going to be a lot of games that feel like playoff-type atmosphere games within those Western Conference teams here in the 2024-25 season. Those are all out now. We'll have a chance to dive a little bit deeper later in the weekend.
Yeah, I mean, you've got me looking at them now. But
I know I do. Mean,
like, Knicks, Bucks, Sixers are all at 51.5, which I don't really know how that makes a ton of sense to me. Yeah. I mean, you're factoring in injury stuff with the Sixers, but, man, I still think they should be a little bit above where you're at, Knicks and Bucks. I think the book's not expecting, you know, you're not expecting Joel Embiid to make it a full season. You don't know about Paul George. I understand why you're baking that in a little bit, but they're still, I think they've still got a better team put together than what the Knicks and Bucks have right now. You know I love the Bucks. I wouldn't be running a bet and under. I do think they figure this out at some point, but there's nothing that me or you saw last year to make you think that the Bucks are going to be, you know, off and running, I think, day one. So I think that's a team where you would just wait on. The Knicks, man, it's an interesting team. They proved a lot to me in the playoffs last year of what they can be going forward, Ben, when I was really not that high on them in years past. But I'm just worried about with the team they've assembled. It puts so much pressure on Jalen Brunson to go out there and put up big scoring numbers night in and night out. And if that there's an injury that occurs to him at any point, it's going to be tough to find consistent offense on that team.
Margin of error still is not great.
Yeah, yeah.
But you do bring up a good point just on a pure power rating perspective, where there appears to be a difference between those three you just listed, yet the win totals are all exactly the same. And maybe that is just the book saying, hey, let's let the bettors give us some early indication of where this thing will go, as other books, most books have yet to post these. That's what we're waiting on here in Vegas for the rest of these to drop. We'll talk later in the week more, I think, in depth about some of our early takeaways here on win totals. In the meantime, we do tend to get some tweets on the show from time to time. I couldn't help but laugh at this during the break from Brian. Can you just have Ben tell us he doesn't think Iga can win Olympic gold, just to get that out of the way to start the week? Hall back for those of you who
there you go.
Inside baseball. But, yes, Iga Swiatek, very big favorite to win Olympic gold at Roland Garros, even though she loses at Wimbledon on the grass. That was that match, the women's final, was probably the perfect encapsulation, Kelly, of that tournament, where each player, Barbora Krejcikova and Jasmine Paolini, simultaneously looked unstoppable and also incapable of winning a point at individual separate times in that match, which was kind of amazing. But Krejcikova ends up winning it in three sets. But classic example of good luck betting women's tennis in today's day and age on grass, the most random and variant of the sports.
I was going to say, that was my biggest takeaway from that tournament was watching these guys. I mean Gil and Drew and everybody who bet tennis this much, and you are – it's just, you know, finding out that Krejcikova had taken so many years avoiding playing on grass and then is able to turn it on like this. It's a different sport now that you don't have the Serenas, right? The Serena and Venus around and on the women's side. You don't have, Federer and all those guys involved on the men's side anymore. It just feels way more wide open, like you said, especially when you get on the grass.
Our two finalists in the women's side, you had this super diminutive Jasmine Paolini who was able to absorb the pace and the power of the grass so well with her small stature and low center of gravity. And then you had this double specialist, Barbora Krejcikova, who had the bulk of her success on clay. And yet you're sitting there on grass and you're watching her just carve angles, and it was a totally different looking final than you would ever have been accustomed to seeing there. As far as the golf, we also got a tweet from our guy Trip Tepper about the sequence of the Scottish Open. I don't know if you were watching this when it happened, Kelly, but it did raise a lot of eyebrows. Robert McIntyre, the hometown kid, he wins the Scottish Open yesterday with a birdie on 18 over Adam Scott, 18 under for Bobby Mack. But the big controversy was the sequence that Tripp is talking about with the practice swing and discovery of a random sprinkler head seemed odd. His practice swing changed the native area, affecting the intended shot, was the point Tripp made. He just didn't like that the hole swung the result. And we had a golf guest come on yesterday, a couple of golf guests who were kind of alluding to Bobby Mack. He certainly got the hometown break there as far as the rules interpretation. But, I mean, it obviously, if you were betting, say, if you had a live ticket on an Adam Scott, for example, I can see how you would have felt hard done by. Still, he had to execute down the stretch. It was tied going to 18. But, yes, that was one where I think if anything for us is, for us who play golf ourselves, that's when we give ourselves, the better lie, because we're like, well, the pros get it all the time, right? Even if it's not apples to apples.
Yeah, I do think that this is going to apply to this week too, coming up with the Open. I think some of that stuff, some of the rule stuff, especially when you're talking about sprinkler heads and things like that, get even more difficult just because of the makeup of the courses and how they're set up and where those things are positioned. But yeah, that was a big moment. That's for sure. That was a big moment, but still tip of the cap, Bobby Mack. I mean, he's having a heck of a summer, picking up his first win in Canada and then getting his home, his home championship. He's becoming an easy guy to root for, in my opinion. Yep. I always liked him before. We were wondering when he was going to pick up that first win, on the PGA Tours. Now got that out. He's done that twice now this season already. And, we'll see how he carries it over to next week at the Open, because you might remember after he won in Canada, he did what I would definitely do, and it was, I'm going to take a week off and go party after my first win. He's not doing this
Can't do that. Yeah. Bobby Mack, 40-1. He was still 5-1 going into yesterday. And the other question coming out of this, and we'll flip it forward as well, Open Championship breakdown, we'll have our first thoughts here with Kelly coming up in our next segment. But this is now two pretty big high-profile tournaments in the last couple months where Ludwig Åberg has just not looked the same, whether it was at Pinehurst fading on Saturday and Sunday or yesterday. Even money favored going into round four. No reason to think, based on the first three rounds, that Åberg would fall off. And I guess it's a good reminder, Rex Hoggard was a guest we had on yesterday on the show, Kelly, from Golf Channel, who was making the point, hey, I know the betting market loves this guy, but he is still so young, and yeah, he's got some time to figure out how to actually win on tour. But Oberg, for a second tournament in a very short span, once again, Kelly, was a tough guy, really struggled with his game yesterday.
Yeah, he's becoming tough to figure out, because I think there was the odds got chopped on him just in general in tournaments, right? Almost too quick, so you couldn't, at least the way I've been approaching him, I really haven't bet him very often because of the short odds that have occurred with Ludwig, you know, after very limited success on the PGA Tour. But, man, yeah, it is... I understand what you're saying as far as those couple kind of late in tournament situations, but man, he is putting up consistent stats week in and week out.
He's always right there.
Yeah, right, yeah.
Going into the weekend, it feels like it's just, can he get through the mental hurdles that impact so many players in the game? We'll dive deeper into the Open Championship, some first thoughts as we start hour number two of A Numbers Game right after this.